Needless to say, there have been many of those. The planned ones, appearing in the annual plays and shows that have always been a feature of life at Queen's College. Billy Miller looks back.
The school pantomimes you always remember. It was the highlight of the school year. And I remember a couple in my time. But I think I remember most of all the first play where we were permitted to use the Barbadian dialect. And I remember going in great trepidation to the headmistress, Mrs. Randall, and asking permission and getting it. And then discovering, again, we were quite shocked that people like Miss Pilgrim and Miss Hackett were willing to help.
Looking back has become standard practice among old girls of the school when they meet contemporaries who can share reminiscences like those exchanged here by Anne Hewitt and Bobby Emptage.
The most ludicrous time in my life, I don't know if it was anxious or frightening or both or amusing, but it was a time that I think I set some kind of a record by getting 3 detentions in the same morning. One for having forgotten my shorts at home, one for not having marked my blouse, which we used to call a romper in those days, and the third for laughing at the ridiculous situation of having got the first two.
I had a most anxious moment my first term in school when baths were built and nobody seemed to know what to do with them. And most people protested and parents sent letters saying you catch cold and various other terrible things would happen to the children. And I was quite happy about jumping in a bath. I mean, it didn't worry me in any way. And preparing for this bath or something, there was a suggestion that we hold somebody who was still dressed and everything, almost a muffler and a heavy coat, because she couldn't even take those off in public. And I was posted as a sentry at a door to prevent her from escaping. And who should come along but the teacher in charge of the junior school in those days, because you were little. I think it was 9 years old. And found me acting as a Brinks across one of the only exits, and where I was arrested immediately and marched before the headmistress in an undressed state. And parents were called and guardians were called and expulsion was promised and all kinds of things.
The threat of expulsion or suspension or just an involuntary trip to the headmistress's office can hardly be easily forgotten. And for some reason, singing lessons often provided the backdrop for the sort of incident synonymous with such unwelcome prospects. For Anne Hewitt, the memory of those singing lessons is still clear.
What I remember about the singing was the kinds of songs that we liked, the one about the grasshopper sitting on a railroad track, singing Polly Wolly Doodle All Day, picking his teeth, etc. But something which happened once, which got us almost into the headmistress's office, was that there were some young ladies who were noted for their deportment and their decorous manner, and they were seated on a bench in front of another group of young ladies, not quite famed in the same way. I mean, decorum and deportment were not our strong points at that time. And we thought it would have been wise and sort of, you know, very exciting to remove the bench that these ladies were sitting on. So we just pulled it back about 6 inches, whereupon the two ladies smoothed their uniforms. They sort of lowered their height and they came down and they didn't stop until they touched the ground, you know, to guffaws and cheers, and poor Mr. Hudson not knowing how to handle young ladies who were not behaving in a ladylike manner.
Singing lessons were always enjoyed by the girls, who at the time Anne Hewitt was at school were always willing and eager to offer a lusty rendition of songs like The Music Makers. The youthful music makers often tested the patience of their long-suffering music master.
His strongest method of discipline was to crash bass chords as hard as he can get, saying, snarl, and that was supposed to bring about 90 young women immediately to order. I really don't know how he achieved any success at all with his choirs, but we have won several competitions, but certainly not from the effort which was put in by the girls during the class.
There are times for hearing and the singing. There are times for learning how. Times to spell for a song.
It was in 1972, on the anniversary of his 50th year of service, that the Hudson Hard Courts were opened, and in 1975 that Queen's College said goodbye to Gerald Hudson, a teacher remembered with affection by generations of schoolgirls. Unforgettable, too, is the name of Florence Bend, a member of the school's domestic staff. From 1911 to 1958, she gave devoted service, endearing herself to all. It was she who planted the Pride of India tree outside the main building, a tree by which she asked on her retirement to be remembered. The sentiments of Sheila Pilgrim represent a worthy tribute.
We all love Bend on the staff. She was unique, and she could never be replaced. And when she left, we always said, if only Bend were here. She had a great love and affection for the school and for all the girls in the school. And you could ask Bend to do anything, anytime, and she did it most willingly. Extremely courteous, a real gentle woman. And she loved Queen's College very much too, to the extent that when she left school and she got her little house up there, Combermere, she called it Queen's Cot.
For so many people to have been associated with Queen's College for so long is certainly significant. One might assume, with good reason, that a pleasant atmosphere prevailed. But what of those pupils like Adele Lynch, who joined the Queen's College family from the Aline School when she was in her mid-teens? How did she settle in?
From the point of view of discipline, especially, it was somewhat different, very different, let's say. Not that one was not disciplined in any way at the Aline School, but in a country school with mainly students of a sort of poorer background and so on, there were certain things which were allowed or passed over, let's say, that would certainly not be tolerated at Queen's College. I mean, even from the point of view of the wearing of certain items of uniform, I mean, if you came from a poor home, etc., in St. Andrew, and your shoes were not good, then you were allowed to wear your soft shoes quite gaily to school until your parents could afford to have those shoes repaired or buy you new ones. But this would not go down too well at Queen's College.
Clearly, Adele Lynch was one of the girls who had to make mental adjustments when she transferred from the Aline School. But what did she gain most from her 4 years at Queen's College?
I had a wider knowledge of people and the way people behave. And I was always acutely aware of the fact that whatever I did would influence the reception that any other person coming after me from the Aline School would get. I was sort of rather careful and tried to adjust as well as possible. And I think I managed.
That was to her credit, since the transition wasn't always easy, particularly for girls coming over from the school considered to be a rival, St. Michael's. But times change, and with them, customs. And today, barriers have been broken down, gaps have been narrowed. The curriculum, too, has seen a number of changes. And headmistress Dame Elsie Payne compares it in these words.
Much wider, much more stimulating, and with the coming of the Caribbean examinations, I think that we are facing a great challenge for the better from the point of view of improving the curriculum to suit Barbados and the rest of the West Indies.
As for the school itself, let's hear the view of the teacher who happens to be currently the longest-serving member of staff, Monica Skeet.
The school is now a much more open school. By that I mean we must face the fact that in the past it did cater to groups whose whole upbringing and whose values and whose attitudes were
different from the rank and file. So today, with an open door where you have children coming from every strata of society, naturally, values do vary at different levels of society. So when what would be so important to one group doesn't even make sense to another. Whereas schooling, as we know it, was the privilege of the few who came from an environment where there was ease and leisure and culture. What, by culture, I mean a more sophisticated way of living. Today, people who have not had those advantages have a much more earthy approach. And since they're the majority, they give that sort of coloring. But it isn't that they're any less worthwhile people.
From a roll of 33 girls in January 1883, Queen's College now accommodates almost 800 girls and boys. Not surprisingly, there's need for 2 head girls and 4 deputies. One of the head girls, Elizabeth Quinton, explains how this relatively new system works.
One head girl for one term has to organize prefect duties, make sure that each class that doesn't have a teacher has a teacher for whatever period, and to make sure that all the duties around the school, that's like break duty around first forms, making sure they don't go in the classroom, canteen duty to make sure everybody lines up, and that type of thing, you know, really practical, down-to-earth stuff. And then the other head girl for the same term will do things like attending to assembly, making sure notices are pinned up and taken around, and attending to the staff-student committee as well.
The staff-student committee must provide a necessary vehicle of communication between teachers and pupils. And it must be interesting to hear how teachers who dealt with children of the 50s and 60s see the children of today. Monica Skeet, whose service has so far spanned a 33-year period, is in an excellent position to comment.
The children today have their attitude towards most things perhaps a bit more casual than we were used to. And yet when one says that in one breath, there are moments and occasions when they behave in much the same way as every generation behaves. When it comes to the nitty-gritty, I still believe that most children today want to succeed, they want to help. Now, I would like to say something about this. Nobody's going to offer to help you do anything. But I don't think it is because they don't want to help. I can remember, let us say, in the 50s, it would be unheard of for a member of staff to walk any distance carrying any heavy load, books or what have you, without somebody rushing to offer. No, that is the exception. And yet, if you wanted them to do something for you, they would go all out, they would do it. So is it really that they have changed that much, or it is perhaps that people's attitudes are more casual, so they don't expect to do it, they expect you to ask. Sometimes I'm infuriated with this generation, but then they would, just at the moment when I want to throw them out of the window, they would do something that is so especially touching, and yes, I still believe in them.
There are others at Queen's College, apart from the children, whose attitudes and application to their tasks have made those who come into close contact with them believe in them. Gloria Cummins considers one of these people to be school porter, Dighton Gulston.
Represents very much, in a very, very masculine and firm and quiet way, the same values that Queen's College has stood for so many years, and who's contributed to them, and whose departure, I think, will be a sad loss to Queen's College.
In looking ahead, the future seems bright for the school. But what does present head girl Elizabeth Quinton think she would have gained from having attended?
When I leave Queen's College, I think I will take away a better character. I think I'll be a lot more disciplined, and being in sixth form, I think I'll be able to, you know, just understand what the world outside is like, and, you know, be able to handle things myself.
That's the view of a schoolgirl. And how does Minister of Education Billy Miller see the future? I asked her if she saw Queen's College playing a much different role in the years ahead.
Yes, I should hope that it will play a different role, an expanded role. We grew up during the time that we were both at Queen's College, sharing facilities with Harrison College. Mostly all girls went over to them. to do science. Now, of course, they're boys at Queen's College, and they're hoping to have facilities for home economics for the boys to do. And boys from Harrison College who want to do that would, of course, come over to Queen's College. I've taken an attitude now in the Ministry of Education that Queen's College, Harrison College, and the St. Michael's School, and the Roebuck School, because they're within easy walking distance of each other, should be treated as one grand campus. So I think that Queen's College will now, I think, enter into a phase of its life where there will be an even greater sharing than we knew in our time. And I hope that very quickly we will come, the whole of Barbados, to see it together with Harrison College and the St. Michael's School and the Roebuck School as one campus.
Well, so much for the near future. Somewhat further ahead, Queen's College may, as the computer age progresses, change beyond recognition, as Sheila Pilgrim speculates.
I don't know that it will exist in its own form or any school. I think we'll all be hiding away in little cells somewhere or the other, being taught mechanically, and I can think of nothing more frightful.
Here at the crossroads we pause, fate and future in hand, willing to fight for the cause, either to fall or stand.
Serene in the knowledge that we have the vision and wisdom to choose the best, and discard what the past has shown to us unfit for the future's test. May we nurture the open mind, shaping, molding the seed we find, conscious, preserving the right.